Chapter 3. It was as if the planet had tired of human beings but had not been able to rid itself of them. There were too many of the pests. Overwhelmed by a parasitic species it could not eradicate, the Earth had decided instead to starve them into submission, to deprive them of the things that had helped them survive so long and so disastrously. Breathable air, fuel for their comfort and commerce, inhabitable ecosystems. The price paid was steep. So steep the Earth itself was in stasis, alive but barely. Now it was a waiting game to see how long the humans could sustain themselves on next to nothing. It was a terrible waiting game, with time on no one's side. The island had once been teeming with industry. A major city before its collapse, it had been the envy of a world that no longer existed. It had been the center of finance, politics, fashion, progress. A microcosm of civilization. It was a magnet, and like a magnet, it had attracted people like tiny metal shavings, filling up for centuries until, finally, it had caved in upon itself. It hadn't been alone. Every city, large and small, had crashed and burned. Modern society and everything it required to sustain itself had been sucked into deprivation like an enormous sinkhole, leaving behind it places like the ruins and the slopes. The wealthy, desperate few, had managed to cling to the sides, barricading themselves in artificial communities, tossing packets of power and rations of food to the rabble outside the razor wire. Like the planet itself, they knew the odds were against them, but they bet on winning anyway. There was always extermination. The question came down to who would exterminate whom. Harry had been a child of privilege. Born Harold Hellerman, he was an identical twin to Elliot and older by 3 minutes. He was the son of Joshua and Elizabeth Hellerman and expected to enjoy a life of surplus. Joshua Hellerman had been a major figure in a financial world on the cusp of destruction, a banker whose decisions had once held more sway than those of an American president. A president could send armies to war, but a banker with nearly unlimited power could destroy countries, ruin millions of lives, or make the lucky few unimaginably wealthy, which was Joshua's true purpose in life. He was the epitome of the greed and gluttony that had doomed Homo sapiens since they'd made their way from treetops into boardrooms. It was a shock of sorts when Harry and Elliot were set upon a different path, joining control when they were still teenagers. Their parents had sent them off to be educated and disciplined, never expecting their sons to become the creme de la creme of state-sponsored hitmen. It was an uneasy symbiosis. People like Joshua and Elizabeth needed control to protect their advantages. Control needed people like the Hellermans to fund their de facto government, which had begun as a junta, and both needed men like Harry and Elliot to keep a deadly order. By the time the twins emerged from their mother's womb, the world the Hellermans knew was rapidly deteriorating. Rich people, wealthy nations and city-states could amass all the gold and virtual wealth they wanted to. It would not increase the resources that made the planet livable. As societies discovered to their detriment, you cannot buy air, at least not the kind provided by the Earth in its natural processes. You cannot hoard oil when the planet has no more to remove, and you cannot manufacture synthetic water. Human beings, in the end, were as vulnerable to extinction as any other species, and many saw it as fitting that after bringing about the disappearance of countless life forms that had shared this tiny blue spot in space, it was now the humans' turn. Or so it seemed. A crucial difference between humans and all the others was the sheer tenacity of the highly intelligent bipeds to survive. Consciousness, cunning, foresight, and opposable thumbs had given people just enough of an edge to outlive the competition, with the exception of cockroaches and certain deep water organisms. It was not enough to sustain the standard of living most people were accustomed to as the world around them heated and crumbled. But it was enough to leave a significant number alive after the apocalypse. Harry was born just as humanity teetered on this edge, its fall into chaos accelerating with one crash after another. Financial markets, housing markets, grain markets, money markets. Everything that had defined modern life for generations was being sucked into oblivion as Harry and his brother gasped for their first intake of air, screaming after a doctor's slap that served as a warning. Welcome to the new world. Enter at your own risk. Harry believed he had been served by the timing of his birth. Had he been born much sooner, he would have experienced life as filled with loss, something it would take Raoul's death years later to inflict upon him. He would have seen the world go from one of seeming bounty to one of dire consequences, deprivation, and hostility. By being born just as it all came crashing down, he had a certain immunity to it, an absence of nostalgia or sentiment. He did not miss what he had never known. He did not love his parents, and his father, certainly, did not love him. The only person before Raoul he could say he loved was Elliot, the brother and twin he shared nearly every waking moment with until fate dealt one more cruel blow in a lifetime of them. And yet Harry did not consider himself bleak. He was not without feeling. But what he had in much greater abundance was control. He smiled at the thought. Control. They had taken him with his parents' blessing, their relief, really, and turned the brothers into killing machines. He was not in the blame game, with one exception. He did not fault others for his own faults, and he did not regret anything in his life. The dead, and the ones he'd made dead, did not trouble him. He knew that great gaping silence was the final destination for everyone. He simply sped some on their way. He sat on his haunches on the loft floor, staring out through his large plate glass window at the night. His fingers troubled the leather necklace he had worn for 5 years, the one he'd taken from Raoul's body just before it had been burned in a crematorium's furnace. He would take it off only once, when he put it around the neck of the woman he had sworn to kill. She was out there. She had been found. She would be found again. He did not intend to punish Crater. The man was dull but useful, and never hesitated to end a life on his behalf. Harry had not expected them to capture Nectar, only to find her. She moved around constantly, aware of the price on her head and of the many lesser beings who would consider her death the greatest of trophies. It was only by luck his men had found her, but she'd seen them first. She had let Crater live to deliver a message. She had been full of herself, assured and arrogant. She had made a mistake,